save the dog.
Ladies and gentlemen, rebel scum and loyal to the Empire, this is Sith Talk, the show that talks Star Wars movies, Star Wars comics, Star Wars books, Star Wars TV, and now games. I am your host, Zach Chrisman, a.k.a. The Lord of Lore, and joining me, as always, is Lindsay, a.k.a. The Lady of Lore. Lindsay, how are you doing?
I am doing good. You know, life is good, a lot of Star Wars stuff going on, so it's just, it's a good time to be alive for me. It's a good time to be a Star Wars fan for anyone. So what could I possibly complain about?
Yeah, I mean, I sound like very boring old man-ish. Is just like the only thing that I can complain about is in Indiana, the weather is still like hit and miss. So I'm waiting for pure vitamin D. But aside from that, yeah, things are picking up. There's a lot of exciting stuff when it comes to fandom, Star Wars. I mean, last week upon recording, it's this week current, is CinemaCon. So like I'm listening to a lot of people talk about the movies that they've seen or saw previews for. There's nothing really to go off in the Star Wars world, but it's just it's a very exciting time to be a fan. One of the things that's super excited, which some of our listeners have probably already started playing, I'm already probably playing upon record the release date, is Jedi Survivor. If you're still thinking about getting the game, I haven't played it yet upon recording, but I'm seeing a lot of really good things about this game. IGN is giving it a 9, and with their little review, they say if Respawn makes a third game like Star Wars Jedi Survivor and Fallen Order, it'll complete the best Star Wars trilogy in 30 years, hands down, which is huge. And one of the things that in the review, I never listen to IGN's reviews for too long. I listen to about 5 minutes of it and then I walk away, because they do, while they don't give spoilers, they show a little bit of footage that I don't want to see and they kind of imply things, so I never finish. But the biggest part that got me sold within like 2 or 3 minutes of watching is they're saying that this is the Arkham City to the Batman Arkham games, which is phenomenal for me because Arkham City is like the first game that IGN ever gave a 10 out of 10. And it's what got me into the Arkham games. I never played the first one, and then I got into Arkham City, and that game is one of the most like powerful games I've ever played. So that's huge praise. Lindsay, are you going to play? Are you excited for Fallen Order?
Survivor. I mean, this is going to be, I feel like, actually kind of interesting segue into the bulk of the episode. But I've been saying for a few months now that I have been more excited for Jedi Survivor than I have season 3 of Mandalorian. And what's going to be interesting to me now is, will those feelings really hold true? Because I love season 3 of Mando so much more than I thought I would. So hopefully Jedi Survivor does that as well. And it's not like, oh man, I really misjudged my excitement levels on these ones, huh? But as long as that holds true and Lucasfilm keeps building steam and keeps making these great stories, yeah, I think I'm going to really enjoy it. Because I really and truly have been more excited for this game than I was season 3.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I would say that, yeah, I don't know if I can track what I felt before, so it all seems like kind of pointless for me to even make a comment about that. But when it comes to Jedi Survivor, I'm always just looking forward to being a Jedi, to playing as Cal Kestis. I think Cal is, and I told Sam this when Fallen Order came out, you know, Cal is such a great Jedi, and the way they write him is very different, because there's always the trope, and I'm not complaining about the trope of like every Jedi, will they go to the dark side? Is there a chance of them turning dark, going bad? And I always look at Cal like his name is Cal, but he kind of reminds me of Kal-El, Superman. Like he has this honor, this duty. He's uplifting. He's fun to be around, and even through hardships, he's a breath of fresh air. Like, he's just got this hope, and I'm very excited to see what the second installment of him is, and kind of what is his worldview now after years in this fight. Is he still a ray of hope, or is he kind of changed some things a little bit? But either way, the way Cameron Monahan, yes. The way he plays Cal, even when there's emotional stuff, like, you always feel it and you can always see it, in his eyes, in his attitude, in his voice. And that's what makes Cal so much fun to play. So I'm really excited. But going off of Jedi Survivor, because we don't have much to talk about until we actually play the game, Mando Season 3 is in the books. It's wrapped up. It's gone. It is finished. And so I want to get your thoughts and just start with you when it comes to Mandalorian Season 3.
I mean, like I said, huge fan of it. I have to say, out of all three seasons, this really was my absolute favorite. And I'd have to go back and rewatch, I think, the whole series with a very critical eye to be able to say and defend this is why. But as someone who wakes up crazy early every Wednesday morning, and I you know, have my automatic coffee pot 5 minutes before, and I pour my coffee and I let my dogs out and I watch it a couple of times before work, all tired and exhausted. This was the season that almost every single week I would go into work just hyped up, right? It was never like that was pretty disappointing. Were there some episodes that were a little less exciting than others? Yes. But overall, I just loved the real deep, meaningful, overarching theme and overarching plot line of this season compared to the other two. The other two, it's not that they were bad by any means. Obviously, I love The Mandalorian. And obviously, I love Grogu and everything it entailed. And I really like the story that they were given in Book of Boba Fett, even if I didn't love Book of Boba Fett. One of my major gripes with season two, I said it at the time and I'll keep saying it, season two treats Baby Yoda as this cute baby and a novelty. Whereas this one, they finally, thank God, abandoned that. Like, I could not just deal with all the little side cuts in these could be powerful episodes of just like, and here's Baby Yoda doing some cute baby things. This felt more mature. This felt, the stakes were high. This felt like a lot of tension. And it really got me going and got me hyped up to be a Star Wars fan for all the character development, for all the potential with what we could see for Mandalore, whether it be in projects in the future timeline or even projects in the past. There was just so much buildup, and I really did just get so excited every single week with what's going to happen next. And I feel like that what's going to happen next concept didn't really happen in the first two seasons.
Okay. So I want to start off by saying that this conversation that I'm going to have, I am not going to try and be a negative man, Nancy. There is a lot of things that I really loved about season three. But it's not my favorite. I think season two by far is my favorite. So with that being said, I actually I disagree. I feel like I almost feel the opposite when it comes to Grogu. I feel like Grogu had more to go off of and had more intrigue in season two than season three. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I didn't feel like he had much growth in this season. My problem with... Okay, so I love season three's overarching story. So I can understand why you like it. And I'm not saying I don't like it. I do like season three. I guess if I were to make like a review of season three in short, I would say The Mandalorian season three has a story that is powerful, and it is about a group of people rising together to take back their home. And that story is amazing. When we're actually doing that story, I felt pulled away from certain things, and I felt like there was some huge writing mistakes that just seemed a little thrown together. I really didn't like the kid going missing episode. I didn't like the Jack Black and Lizzo episode. But when we got to the story, it was powerful. Like, I almost call this the Book of Bo, season three, and I'm not complaining about the Book of Bo. So I want to kind of like see what your eyes are when it comes to like the growth of Din Djarin and the growth of Grogu. I want to know what you see.
So I'll give you this much. Grogu had a lot more growth in season two. That I would say you are correct. That is an undeniable fact. The difference is Grogu's growth to me is not the point of the show. The point of the show really is and should be focused around Mandalorians and thematically what it means to be a person of honor and to have this code. And why do you have this code? And what do you do when the code is challenged? You know, it's, I want to say Jon Stewart has this amazing quote, you know, your principles should be just that. You have to stick with your principles when it's hard. If you don't, they're not principles, they're hobbies. And I think the beauty of Din Djarin is he really exemplifies that, right? He sticks to his principle when times are hard and they're not hobbies. Whereas Grogu is an accessory. And it's a way to highlight and show that. So I don't think the show necessarily, while yes, season two had a lot of Grogu's growth, I don't think that's really the point of it. So you're right there. And now I already lost track of what the original question was. But I guess how about Grogu and Din Djarin. Yeah. So while, yeah, Grogu didn't have a crazy amount of growth, that to me is fine. Nice. But I'm fine with it. That doesn't bother me. I think Din, though, really did have quite a bit of growth. And we really see that when he goes up to Bo and he says, you know, your song hasn't yet been sung, but, you know, I'm pledging myself to you and I'm pledging my honor to you. Because he doesn't give that lightly. You know, it's not like someone we see go up every single season and repledge his sword or something. That's the first time that we really had this deep, meaningful Din submitting and saying he really believes in this person. Even though they don't see eye to eye on every single thing, he understands her value. And he understands why what she thinks and what she does is so important. So I see quite a bit of growth in him. Is most of the growth from Bo? Yes, of course. I'll be honest, I'm hopeful if the show continues, it does do a little bit more on Bo and the Mandalorians than it does Din, because I think Din got his happy ending. You know, I love that he is now this contractor and he's going to have all these side quests and all these adventures. But in terms of your point of you got annoyed when it was, hey, this kid is missing and here's this Jack Black episode, like, that was always the point of season one and two. It always was, here's these little side quests. And I think season three did it so much less, and that's why it was jarring when it happened. But that's the entire premise of season one and two, is here's these little mini episodes, and then at the end of it, it's going to be a big episode. So, and I know I had mentioned this to you too, but it's so interesting looking back on when the show was announced and what we thought the show was going to be and who this is. I feel like I've been talking for a long time, so I'm putting this on you. Pop quiz. Other than Pedro Pascal, Who were the two actors that they kept toting?
I can't remember. I'll be honest.
It was Carl Weathers and Gina Carano. And oh, yeah. I do not want to make this a political podcast. I do not want to make this a, you know, me and you getting on our high horse about social issues. Fact of the matter is Gina Carano was canceled and she's no longer with Disney. We don't have to get into all of that. But I think that is such an interesting concept because had that not happened, would this show still be, here's all these bounty hunters side quests and here's all the light ways that this plays in and maybe we'll touch on Mandalorian and get to it later in a different show at some point. But the main focus of the show is Din and Cara Dune and these outlaws going and banding together and having these fun adventures. No, she was canceled. They had to write her out in a very nonchalant way. And to do that, then you have to replace it with something.
But I want to counter that. Okay. Because I didn't. Now, look, I love Cara Dune. I love that character. I'll just be honest, though. I didn't feel like I missed her at all. Like, Star Wars has a very easy way of, like, you can pick up these characters and put them off. And if she didn't get fired for, you know, political standpoints and stuff like that, had she not been in the season, I'd be like, oh, wow, I can't wait to see her. And had it not been so public to where I would know that she definitely got fired, mm-hmm. I would have been like, oh, wow, there wasn't any Cara Dune here, huh? I bet you they have something planned for her later. Like, I did feel the momentum of the story, and I didn't feel like necessarily Cara needed to be a part of it. Could she? Because she had a lot of rapport with him. Absolutely. I think there was definitely a way where she's in the background, like, second, you know, checking in with him, like, hey, are we sure we want to do this? How do we unite Mandalorians? Like, somebody that's, like, kind of thinking what we're thinking as the crowd. I think she could have definitely stood in that role. You know, my problem, and I see your, I know that there is standalone episodes in season one and two, and but I always felt like I got something out of them. And specifically, like, I got a lot out of the Coruscant episode, a lot more than a lot of other people did, because I really bought into that story and I thought that writing was really on point. My problem with the Missing Child episode, which I should have this pulled up, what that episode title is, but unfortunately I don't. My problem was that literally happened earlier in the season. The like same kid got taken by a different monster, and I was just like, you know, from my point of view, it's like, maybe we should move the fuck away from a bay or a cave and get the fuck out of here if kids just keep getting pulled up, like, out of nowhere. But I don't want to nitpick that. I don't want to be, I'm not interested in trashing on what I didn't like. So, like, when it comes to the writing, like, I feel like the writing wasn't as sharp. I do feel like the Cara Dune, like, her being gone and being fired did cause some writing shakeups, because I think he had a lot figured out going in to all this. I think there was more shakeups from a studio standpoint. From that point, you know, they had Bob Iger was the one running Disney when they started season two. They had a different CEO moving through. They had, you know, they had a lot of success. Grogu sells a lot of toys. I think there was some things that had, that, you know, maybe a boardroom had changed because they wanted him, you know, as part of the entire show because of those sales. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I just want to say that I feel like I'm in the minority when I say this. I'm hearing a lot of people that I respect, that I listen to, like Christian Harloff, the Big Thing podcast. Everybody complains about the episodes being too short. I argue that I felt like this season could have been 5 episodes. And I would have preferred 5 episodes of just balls to the wall, like going on to the main stories, or if we're doing a pull away, gaining something from them. I feel like you could cut a couple episodes out of this season and it would be so beautiful. I feel that same way about Obi-Wan. There's this YouTuber who cut the entire Obi-Wan series into a straight up movie, which it was originally planned for, and it's fucking epic. Like, it's so good. It never stops. It just keeps going. That's my definitive Obi-Wan, is that. That cut of it. I feel like there was so much good stuff going into this season, like writing at the end of season two, and they had so much momentum. And in a lot of ways, it was killed by some other things, but the story that is there when it comes to the Mandalorians is powerful stuff, and I can see why people really like it, because they're buying into the themes, and you've talked about themes and these characters specifically, you know, the Mandalorian characters, Bo, those are powerful, powerful characters, and that is what makes this season, that is what really shines in this season. It's just, to me, I could have done without the fluff. And I'm not saying that you can't have these side quests that are, you know, powerful, because, I mean, Rebels is filled with pulling people around. Like, I just had a buddy who started Clone Wars, and his comment was, I'm gathering that Clone Wars isn't linear. It's more like kind of all over the place, and I like it a lot, but it's not linear. And Mando kind of does that too a little bit, where it, like, the story is linear, but it does kind of pull you around.
Yeah, well, I think what they probably could do better of in Star Wars, and this goes for, I mean, I want to say every single live action Star Wars show, but there's only been, what, three of them now? But what I would love to see more of is an A plot and a B plot, almost like a sitcom, right? Because I understand what you're saying, where it could have been five episodes. Like, have the Coruscant, because everything comes in the end, right? Everything delivers some kind of importance. But combine those things where maybe one episode is Din Djarin and Bo-Katan on the Lizzo planet solving this mystery. And then the B plot is everything going on Coruscant, because I don't think either of those plot lines really needed full episodes in and of themselves. It could have been a 45-minute episode with an A plot and a B plot and done the exact same thing.
Yeah, and if you are going to do a B plot, though, you have to have actual time to get invested. Yeah. Like, with the Lizzo episode, I feel like they just kind of, like, hey, we need help. We have this mystery, and you guys can't leave until blah, blah, blah. I feel like if it was really, like, Bo-Katan and Din, and they pressed for time, they would have been like, yeah, totally, we'll do that. And then they're just going to go break out and go to the Mandalorians directly. Like, they break into Star Destroyers. They could have easily just been like, yeah, sure, we're not going to do that. And then the last 5 minutes of that episode was the, hey, we're going to unite people. And in an interview, Katie Sackhoff was asked about, like, the run times. And her comment was, like, it, you know, it feels a lot longer when you're shooting it, because, like, Bo's speech to unite the Mandalorians was, like, double what they actually put in the show. And she was being respectful. She wasn't,
She wasn't like, oh, they cut my big speech.
She's just happy to be in this show. Like, at anything that they'll give her,
you know,
she's
what,
just happy.
Though,
like, she just
Katie
had a kid,
Sackhoff,
and she did this season.
Katie Sackhoff has the Daisy Ridley element of, like, the character itself is better because of who they cast. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's so easy to get invested in Bo-Katan as is. But then once you start to dive into, like, the Katie Sackhoff element, how easy is it to just fall in love with that character?
Exactly. And also to add, you know, the difference between Katie Sackhoff and Rey is not their actor performance, but Katie Sackhoff has already been she's been a popular series lead like 20 years ago. Like, she's already been through the height of fame and the downswing of fame and the writing kind of even part of being an actor and AKA celebrity. And she's just happy to have work at this point. Not because she didn't have jobs. Like, people love Longmire. People like the Netflix show Afterlife, or Another Life. It was Another Life. But she's just happy to have a job and put so much dedication to it. And how could you not, as an actor? You think you're just going to go record some Star Wars thing for this new guy, Dave Filoni, and now your face is leading the biggest series on television right now. It's huge. And you see a lot of her shining through Bo, because at the end of the day, like, Katie Sackhoff is an actual badass. Like, in real life, she just is. And her physicality does make way for that performance. And so I will say, like, ultimately, I have a problem with the writing on certain things, but I'm not going to talk about those in detail because I just don't feel the need to. Like, let's talk about what we really like. Let's not talk about a lot of the stuff that we don't like, because I really feel at the end of the day, the story was strong enough to highlight the things that we like. And Bo-Katan was a huge part of that. I've told you this behind recordings, or maybe during recordings. I've been a Katie Sackhoff fan for years at this point. When I did the Spartan race in Hawaii a couple months before that, I was looking up the course because they had done that before. And the first thing that pops up is Katie Sackhoff runs a Spartan race. And she did it in Hawaii. And she placed first. Like,
Jesus.
Yeah, she's like bad. She's bad, bad. And, you know, she's been in the same group of people that I have listened to for years. And this was long before, like, I remember when Christian Harloff was like, hey, you think you're ever going to be in The Mandalorian? And this was like season one when she would just show up to like hang out with them. And she's like, man, I hope, Dave, give me a call. Little did she wouldn't able to tell him until after season two. Yeah, I already knew about that when we talked about it. I think that there is more to go off of with Bo's story than Din's. So it makes it kind of confusing because I do see Din kind of evolve. I do see Grogu kind of evolve. But the identity has shifted between Bo and Din. And I'm like, I'm torn because it's like, while season three has this really nice Bo between Din and Grogu, and I know that they are going to be the center focus going into season four. I'm pretty positive that that's the plan they have. But I'm getting a feeling from like everyone else, and including myself, like, if he's not going to be home-based on Mandalore, which I thought he would be, what is the identity of the show? Because now I'm like, I care more about the Mythosaur, the rebuild of Mandalore, than I kind of care about Din and Grogu's elevation. And that could be, you know, that can be easily fixed with 30 minutes of, you know, season four. But
but if you think about season one and when everything first aired, yes, we were all hyped about Baby Yoda. But one of the common things that everyone kept talking about and being so excited about and saying, I want to learn more about, it's one of, it sticks out to me because honestly, dude, like, it's one of the few times in Star Wars that we kind of got what we wanted, where we heard all about the Creed and the Purge. And we're like, man, I want to see more of that. I want to know what this Creed is. I want to know more about these people who follow this. So it almost seems blindly. And then, yeah, I want to know about the Purge. I want to know exactly what happened. I kind of want to see Mandalore. I want to see what it's like after the Purge. Like, we got everything we fucking wanted from season one. And I get season two really built up more of Din and Grogu. But I like the fact that in season one and now season three, it's away from the individuals. And when we talk about the Mandalorian, it feels plural. Right? Yeah. Like, think about when they announced that episode 8 was going to be called The Last Jedi. Everyone right. kept saying, like, well, is Jedi plural? Is Jedi singular? Yeah. Who exactly? It's the same thing now with The Mandalorian. Like, who was The Last Jedi? Is it multiple people or is it just one? It feels the same with The Mandalorian. And now we have it. Like, it might have transitioned a little bit this season, but I'm here for it because I personally prefer season one over season two of Mandalorian. And I like that we're getting back to some of those questions. And I think we need to thank Dave and thank John, because this is really and truly one of the few times in Star Wars that we've ever sat here and been like, man, they answered my questions. They gave me what I want. I had my wish list and I got it.
they did give me the wish list, and I did get a lot of it. But now, I guess, you know, when it comes to the Mandalorians, now that the hype is out of the way, like, yeah, we're going to reunite. I mean, like, I'm so intrigued on, like, you know, everybody agreed that, you know, the Mandalorians were going to put past their different beliefs and unite the people to create the home, their home. And you see, like, a little bit of a fight between Paz and Axe and, Din and Bo kind of let it happen, which, you know, I agree, get the piss and vinegar out of the way. But that piss and vinegar doesn't just disappear overnight. So now I'm intrigued to see, now that they're actually working together and there's not a focal point, a focal enemy for the Mandalorians to unite, how do they stay united now that there's presumably not an enemy in front of them for them to be focused? Because that's like Mandalorian 101, like Old Republic back in the day. Like, they all united, they rallied, and then when they got scatterbrained, they infighted. They went right back to the infighting. So now I just want to, I'm intrigued to see how they hold on to that piece. And I know that Bo is the key to that piece, but it's easier said than done. Because either way you look at it, their leader is a night owl.
I'm gonna also resurface this, because you're the one who, how many weeks ago, kept telling me, like, we're gonna see Sabine in this, right? Like, Sabine's gonna be here by the end of the season.
I was so fucking wrong.
And
absolutely,
you were so fucking wrong, and you had me convinced too, because I kept arguing. I should have stayed with my gut. But, like, there's also that element of what's going to happen when Sabine comes back. And what is she going to think of this? Is she going to be all for it? Is she going to feel better about, like, yeah, I kind of caused the purge, but here's how it all ended. So I think that's going to be really interesting to see, how she comes back, and if at all she does throw any kind of wrench into this plan. Right. And maybe there is harmony, but maybe when she comes back, let's think about this. Let's think about even a moment in the past, there was at a time a Darksaber. And that was the big thing, right? Like, Sabine gave it to Bo-Katan the same way Din gave it to Bo-Katan. Are people still going to firmly believe that, no, Sabine Wren's the rightful ruler? And is that going to then be the cause of the infighting? Or is whatever threat, and this is what I think is more likely, is whatever threat that is coming in Ahsoka going to be that common enemy that keeps Mandalore together and keeps them fighting for the same purpose? And is this really and truly all the prelude to just say, here is how this one guy with his little adopted Jedi foundling helped Bo-Katan on her rise to power, and because of that, we were able to destroy the heir to the Empire?
Yeah, because, I mean, and you guys will have to forgive me, those listening, I am always been scatterbrained. Unless you give me, like, one movie, it's going to get scatterbrained. So I'm going to introduce this. Much like the MCU, which is something that they're kind of trying to do with the Mandalorian universe, saying that Dave Filoni's movie is going to tie it all together. I think one of the biggest things to look at right now is, and you can do it with Bo, with Din, with Ahsoka. I mean, we don't know much about Skeleton Crew, but for now, let's just stick to those three. With Din, Bo, Ahsoka, and this Dave Filoni kind of live-action verse. You know, you have Din going off to the, you know, kind of working for the Republic in a way, like being like a subcontractor. And you have Bo, and then you have Ahsoka. So I think the way that this is going to play out is the Shadow Council is the main focus to this whole story arc. I think they have to be. Mm-hmm. That we just took off one peg, and that took 3 seasons. And I think the Shadow Council is very much like the Infinity Stones. We have no idea how much, I don't think you can end Thrawn in the Ahsoka series. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But they gave play to that little peek about the Shadow Council And I think that they are going to be the Infinity Stones of this story arc. I think we're slowly, like, on one side, Din's going to be getting intel. The other side, Bo is going to be trying to rebuild Mandalore, and maybe she's watching. But really, I think Din is going to be the one that kind of finds out more about the Shadow Council while working for them. When it comes to Sabine coming back and playing a role, I think her role is going to be more intel to Bo and even Din when it comes to what they dealt with in the Ahsoka series, and having more intel on what's really going on, you know, because they don't know about the Shadow Council. Bo does not know about the Shadow Council. Din does not know about the Shadow Council. And so I think it's going to be piecing together these different findings that each crew member of this story learns in their specific shows and their specific arcs. I think the Shadow Council has to be it.
Yeah, I mean, look at how much time we all spent, too, even just between the penultimate episode and the finale, just talking about, like, who's the spy? Who else is on this council? And none of that really came to be. Maybe, which is, I think, part of the reason why people are a little disillusioned with the finale. I have my own thoughts on that. But yeah, I think they need to build up to this, especially if you think about what's going to combine all these shows together. Like, it kind of has to be that, right? It has to be that common enemy. And as much as we joke around about the Aftermath trilogy just absolutely sucking, it had some really...
Yes, I don't joke about it, because fair. I actually really like the last two books.
The last two books really weren't bad. They really weren't. But when you look at, like, the things it could give us, it potentially set up for a lot. But this is what I'm saying with, like, when you look at what we liked and what we thought after the first season The Mandalorian, it finally has those elements of, oh, I hope we get to see more. And that was the whole thing with Aftermath, is everyone reads Aftermath and thinks, I hope we get more of XYZ. And now this is our way of getting more of XYZ. And they have to capitalize on that. And because of how season three just played out, I'm more confident than I was before that we'll get to see some of those cool elements of Aftermath start to come to light.
And look at you turning the entire episode on its head, because, you know, going down that thought process, I can easily, you know... And this is why the show is so much fun. Like, you have your thoughts, and they're kind of scatterbrained, and you have your opinions, like, where do things move forward? But if you just kind of look at some of these details, and especially with somebody else kind of pointing out other things, it's easy to kind of start trying to piece together those things. And I think you're absolutely correct. And, you know, just to put a little, like, side button in the Sabine thing, I did double down hard on Sabine. I did create detailed predictions.
Oh, I know.
But I do want to make it clear that was, I am being honest when I told everyone that this was never an expectation that I had, that I had to happen, because Sabine, once the season finale was done, I wasn't thinking about Sabine at all rolling into the final episode. She never crossed my mind.
No, it would have. I think whereas Luke in season two finale was like an amazing, oh my God, moment, season two in my mind needed it. And that's like, I get the season two finale was absolutely amazing. I think it had to be after a slightly lackluster season. Whereas if Sabine had rolled in the finale of this one, it kind of would have been like, oh, I was enjoying where we were. Like, I like this. We didn't really need this distraction here. So I think the fact that she didn't show up and she didn't have to show up versus Luke in the finale of season two is more of a credit to season three.
Yeah. But I still always have to disagree with you. I think season two is the best by a mile. I'm never going to get over Boba Fett beating the fuck out of stormtroopers with a gaffy stick. And going back to Tython, and then that whole Luke reveal, like, look, I get it. It was a cameo. It was a drop in on the season, but story wise, I felt like it fit, and it still holds a lot of power over me. Like, I still cannot believe that that happened. When I rewatch it, I still get chills. I still smile like it's the first time I've seen it. Like, it just had so much power over me. And I understand that some of that is the drop in of, look, it's Luke Skywalker. But as a Star Wars fan, that will always take the cake right now for me. It's just the power of seeing Luke in that light. Just, it completely outshined everything. It was the most in tune, and this is one thing, like, I understand the relationship between Din and Grogu and that there is power, but I did not feel that power, that same give and take, the tensions, the emotions, as I did in season two. Like, I knew Din was struggling with things halfway through season two. I knew that little Grogu meant so much more to him than he said in that build-up. And when Luke Skywalker is the one saying, you know, he's wanting your approval, like, that had power to me. Like, and then watching his face saying goodbye to someone, like, I wish we could have played up on that a little bit more. I wish there was more. I think the mistake was having Grogu and him tie up in the Book of Boba Fett and kind of, like, hurry up and bring it back. It was too soon, because I felt like there was so much more tension. Like, I wanted to see Din try and fix these problems alone and try and kind of get more screen time of him realizing and get more screen time of Grogu and them both, like, being on their paths alone. But that ultimate power, it doesn't matter how that happened, writing up to season two, up to that end, there was never more power in my relationship with Din and Grogu than that ending of season two. The thing that they did right was they shifted that power to an amazing actress and to an amazing arc when it comes to Bo-Katan, and they moved the tension over to somewhere else, and they did that very well. But I still do kind of, you know, that's why season two is so hype. It's not just the fact that Luke Skywalker showed up. It's that a lot of my heroes were exactly the way, like, I always envisioned seeing them. I was like, dude, you give Boba Fett, after all these years, the limelight, he's gonna come in like John Wick. And he did. And then Luke, just being Luke freaking Skywalker. It just, like, it still makes me, like...
No, you're right. But I think that's kind of, like I was saying before, too, is where do you see the power of the show? If you see it in Din himself, then, yeah, you need all those elements, right? You need Boba, you need Luke, you need all those add-ons. But for me, the power of the show really did become through the lens of Din and this creature. Was, here's what Mandalorians really represent, here's how they really think of themselves, and here's how they carry on their legacy. That was always, I think, the interesting part to me, where this really highlights that, and then it accomplishes it, and it shifts the power. And that is the strength of season three over season two. So you're not wrong in all of your points. It really just comes down to, what do you prefer? Do you prefer this individualized relationship and that is the strength of the show? Or do you prefer the larger picture? For me, it was the larger picture. For you, I think it was that smaller scale.
Yeah,
and I don't mean smaller scale in a bad way by any way. It's just, it's a personal preference.
I think it was. And I think that's part of, like, why I have a problem with the side quests this season, because I felt like season two, the side quests were about them learning something about themselves or each other, them being Din and Grogu. And in this one, I didn't feel like in the side plots that things were truly learned, like a lesson was truly learned by those parties. I don't think there was any character development with Din going and Bo going to save the Mandalorian kid that they wouldn't have already done before, or they didn't learn anything else about themselves in my light. I didn't see any involvement, like what they learned when they went on the murder mystery or the detective mystery.
Oh, see, that one I did.
And see, I didn't. I just didn't, and that's fine. But overall, the story was...
Well, don't get me wrong. It's not that I like that episode. It's just I saw the point of it.
Yeah, and I didn't. And, you know, that's the great thing about the show is, you know, someone like you or, you know, even the network like Brandon or anyone can kind of make me see where they're coming from that point of view. But the Mandalorians were really powerful. And I do want to highlight something that I did really buy into, and I thought the writing was so strong, was Paz Vizsla going out like a fucking champ. Like,
yeah. I mean, that was out, a shocking moment, too.
It was shocking. It was visceral.
I never saw that coming.
It was
yeah.
brutal, and it kind of like...
It hurt a little.
It hurt a lot for me, because I feel guilty, because I feel like the show wrote Paz in a really good way, because I think it was a lesson learned about a lot of things. Like, you can't always take someone for their singular action. Sometimes there's more to it. And when you look at Paz, you know, you think he's a champ. Like, when you go to season one and he's just raining down trying to help Din escape, you're like, wow, this guy is a bro. We love him. And then when you get into Book of Boba Fett and he's like questioning Din and he's wanting to take the Darksaber, you think, wow, he's kind of a dick. Now he's just a power-hungry Mandalorian. It happens, you know, tenfold. This seems out of nowhere. This is weird. But then you understand, like, by the by season three, you see Paz start to, like, really change and really... You learn more about him through his actions, and then you learn even more about him through his death. And what I learned was, at the end of the day, even when he was going against Din, Paz was a Mandalorian through and through. He believed in his people.
But that's the point. Like, that's what I'm saying with when you look at what we wanted in season one and what we got in season three. Like, yeah, we got it. Not necessarily through Din Djarin. We got it through Paz Vizsla. We got it through Bo-Katan. But, like, we got it.
Right.
I don't know. For me, I really do think it just came down to... Do you like Din Djarin and Grogu, or do you like overall what it means to be a Mandalore? Because if you're thinking just overall, what is the creed? What does it mean to be Mandalorian? Season three finally delivered on it.
Delivered on it? I would say that it definitely introduced what it means to be a Mandalorian, and I can't wait to see when the dust settles what that looks like. What that strength and stability. I want to see them stable. I want to see them thriving, and how these different ideologies within, you know, being human, because I also think that Mandalorian is, you know, it can also be, and I'm not getting political. I think it's a good reflection on people. You know, Mandalorian is the title. Mandalorian is the people. But it's also a lesson on how do we understand that together we are stronger, and that we all have different beliefs. How do we see past these beliefs to be stronger, to create a better world, to create a better life for our kids, for our people? I think Mandalorian is also a symbol for what we could be as a human race. And I'm interested to see how they handle these conflicts of interest, these conflicts of religion. And when you throw in not just two different ways of doing things, religion and myth, i.e. the Mythosaur, how is everybody going to be reacting? And I got to say that whole thing where the Mythosaur just fucking wrecks shop, like, in the middle of nowhere, and they're just like, fucking bail, run. It was so much fun to see. That was like, you did not need that shit to happen right then and there, and then it just, it does, and you're like, oh my god. Like, That
moments like that mean more to me than like the here's Luke. That's why I really do prefer 3 over 2 any day.
And I'm so happy that you do. And I mean, like, at the end of the day, I want everybody to love the show as it keeps growing. And it definitely doesn't hurt my love. Some of my gripes doesn't hurt my love of the show. Like, I'm just as excited to see season 4 as I was going into season 3. I love these characters, and I'm not going to stop being intrigued and loving this world and what this world has done for Star Wars as a whole. I mean, it really was the saving grace in an unsure time in Star Wars. And I think we ultimately, like, gripes, concerns, there were a lot more behind the scenes things going on that I think they had to overcome than we will ever know about going into the season 3. Just from a business standpoint, there was a lot of hiccups at Disney. There was a lot of things moving around. There's a lot of success on this show. The show is the focal point of Star Wars right now. And people, I think there was a lot of people trying to protect their own vision of it. So I think now that we're getting a little bit more stability with our house of, like, Disney and Lucasfilm, I think things will be a lot easier to let the, you know, essentially let the fucking writers do their thing, because it's working. But it doesn't shake anything. I think the show means a lot to a lot of people in a lot of different ways. And I'm excited to see where it grows from that, you know?
It's going to be good one way or another. I have full faith now, especially in where the story is going to wrap up.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be wrapping up anytime soon. I mean, like, Jon Favreau already has season 4 in the bag. And, you know, he's made a lot of comments saying that the story is, you know, halfway there. So he's got a plan. He's got a plan for this. And sometimes you just have to sit back. And that's something that I've learned when it comes to Star Wars. It's just kind of like, don't be so reactionary on the details. I think the sequels taught us one thing, is that it's okay to hype up on your own medicine. But, like, at the end of the day, don't take it for fact. Don't be upset. Just be along for the story. And you know, you can tell when the writing is integral and people actually care about what they're doing every day. And even if some of the things you're not a fan of, Star Wars is for everyone. And, you know, there's people like me who have a couple questions, and there's people like you that love it. And I'm really happy, and I can't wait to watch. Now I feel like I can finally watch this whole show, like, rewatch it and really start to pick up where the things are headed and kind of get the pacing for every season, because it has been a minute since I've done a rewatch. And now that I'm getting season 3 fully, now I can kind of pick up these pieces and go through the details.
Yeah.
But I will say I've never been more excited for Ahsoka. And my only thing is, like, when it comes to Star Wars TV, is whatever you guys do, 30-minute episodes. I don't think the length time is an issue. I think it's a matter of longer episodes. I think it's just a matter of, like, using your episodes appropriately. And I just hope that things get a little bit tighter moving forward. And I'm not saying I don't want, like, side stories. I think you know what I'm saying. I want lessons learned. I want there to be
We have a very clear focus now.
Yeah, and that's all I want. And that's what I think, you know, Ahsoka is going to be. I'm really excited. I really don't see how you can have anything that's not purposeful, that's not in Ahsoka, that isn't actual, like, meaning and purpose. And I can't wait to see Dave Filoni just kind of do his own thing. And, you know, some of the people were talking about length of episodes, and he actually kind of commented that. He's like, I would say that the length is pretty relative when you do this kind of work. One thing John and I are very adamant about is we try to cut it down and strip it down to keep it moving. It's definitely a faster and more intense rules than even George Lucas has. My episodes have actually started pretty long because I wrote them all, so they are all a little different. Probably relative to the other stuff that I've written and done, like the episode The Jedi. It's got to be tight. It's got to be fast. And I need the action to work. It's going to be shorter. If it's going to be shorter, but I would say they are going are in the same range as the Mandalorian episodes. Maybe on average a little longer, but honestly, I don't know where they are right now. In the most recent cuts I've done, I would say it's in the same range. I'm pumped. I'm so pumped.
As we should be. As we should be.
But yeah, you know, guys, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Sith Talk. We cannot wait to talk about Jedi, or at least I can. I don't want to assume for Lindsay, but I can't wait to talk about Jedi Survivor.
I can't either, but it's also pre-release at the time of recording. So
right.
Maybe we can wait. Yeah.
So I want to know your guys' thoughts on Mandalorian Season 3. I think it is overall a little bit divisive. I think there are plenty of points you can go off of. I think there's things you can critique, but at the end of the day, when it comes to Star Wars at this point, we have to think about, like, what is the better use of our time when it comes to Star Wars. Do we want to start thinking, do we want to think about the things we love, or do we want to continue to focus on maybe some of the things that we don't like? And that's something that I've shifted from over time, is just, like, trying to focus on the things we love, because at the end of the day, like, we all have different ideas of Star Wars. We all have different preferences, and I want us to focus on what is truly beautiful about Star Wars. So that'll do it for this episode. You can find me at SithTalker25 talking all things Spartan Race, Deca, barbecue, Star Wars, comic books. I've been getting really into the Chip Zdarsky Daredevil run and the Chip Zdarsky Batman run. He is the first writer to be writing both Batman and Daredevil at the same time, which is mind-blowing, and the stories are great. So you can check me out on Instagram, kind of talking about that stuff. Lindsay, where can they find you? And while you're at it, why don't you tell us more about what we do at Clashing Sabers?
So you can always find me in our Facebook group, Clashing Sabers, Star Wars Clashing Sabers. Definitely tag me there, Lindsay Gadotti. But more importantly, other than just connecting as a wonderful community, I really do have to say we do build each other up quite a bit. But we are first and foremost a nonprofit organization, and our entire mission is to get these stories that we love and that have really changed our lives into the hands of students across the country. So we work with schools and with classrooms to make sure that these students who need these stories have them ready. We go and we supply books to school libraries, to classrooms. So of course, if you can join our Patreon, every single dollar we make goes right to this mission. If you can't, we totally understand. Go over to clashingsabers.net. And if you know of a teacher, or if you know of a school who might need some of these books and some of these services, go ahead and refer them, and we're more than happy to hook them up with some free material.
And with that being said, guys, may the Force be with you.
Always.
All Clashing Sabers productions are the intellectual property of the Clashing Sabers Network and ClashingSabers.net. All licensed sounds and images are the property of their respective copyright holders and are used for informational and educational purposes only. For more information on our nonprofit or to nominate a teacher, go to ClashingSabers.net. For questions or inquiries, please email us at ClashingSabersNetwork@gmail.com.
You're just going to walk away?